Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hey, podcast listeners. If you're listening to this in real time and you're listening in the U.S., happy Mother's Day. It's possible that this day brings up all kinds of feelings for you. Joy, sadness, pride, grief, wonder, disappointment, loneliness. There are so many emotions wrapped up in our journey to motherhood, especially because many of us are pursuing motherhood in a non-traditional way. So as a kind of Mother's Day gift to you, I want to do a quick little solo episode today to talk about processing emotions. If you've been listening to the podcast from the beginning, you may remember that way back in episode one, I talked about how the single greatest choice refers not just to the big decisions we make around motherhood and singleness and fertility and all of that, but also the choices we make every day about what thoughts we choose and how those thoughts can shape our beliefs, our feelings, and our actions. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you may want to listen to that episode first so that this one will make sense. I do truly believe in the idea that our thoughts create our feelings and that we get to choose our thoughts. But I also think that in that previous explanation about choosing our thoughts, I kind of skipped over an important part of the process. So that's what I want to talk about today. When we try to move too quickly from a negative thought to a positive one, oftentimes we end up bypassing our feelings rather than truly processing them. A leap from negative to positive will feel kind of phony, and it won't stick if we don't do the work to address the painful emotions that were created by that negative thought. So, how do you process an emotion? The first step is naming the emotion as it comes up. When a close friend announces her pregnancy after you've been trying for months, are you feeling envy? Or is it fear, because maybe you're afraid it's never going to be your turn? Once you've given it a name, the next step is to identify where it is in your body and what it physically feels like. Is it throbbing behind your temples? A lump in your throat? A knot in the pit of your stomach? Here's the good news about feelings. They really are just a thought plus some sort of sensation in the body. Even when they are unpleasant, they usually don't last very long, unless you keep feeding them with more thoughts. Where we get into trouble with feelings is when we try to resist them. If you try to pretend like your friend's announcement is no big deal, like it doesn't bother you at all, like it doesn't activate some of your deepest fears, you might get away with it in the short term, but those emotions will come up again somehow. You'll notice that you've begun to avoid your friend's calls, or you'll throw yourself into a big project to distract yourself from the pain. The key, then, is not to bypass your emotions by trying to move from negative to positive thoughts too quickly. In order to release a painful emotion, you have to first accept it and allow it to move through you. A great analogy I've heard is that resisting emotions is like trying to hold a beach ball underwater. You can do it for a while, but it takes a lot of energy, and eventually it's going to pop back up and smack you in the face. Resisting emotions that way actually takes a lot more energy over time than just allowing the emotions to be expressed. Rather than trying to stuff them down, like the beach ball analogy, it's best to think of yourself as a surfer and just allow yourself to ride the wave of emotion all the way through to the end. You were actually born knowing how to do this. Think of a small child having a temper tantrum. A little kid gets told, "No, you can't jump off that tall object," or "You can't have that expensive toy." And they immediately and passionately express their feelings about it by throwing a full-on tantrum. Those feelings that didn't exist moments before the disappointment are allowed to just be. Again, when we truly feel them, emotions don't last very long, unless we keep feeding them more thoughts. So the tantruming child's crying will eventually begin to subside, and then exhaustion hits. Often, you'll see a child who's winding down from a tantrum engage in self-soothing. They'll suck their thumb or rub their face in their blankie or curl up in a little ball. Once the child has ridden the wave all the way through, they are often immediately cheerful and ready to play again. It's common to see giggles and smiles emerging through their not yet dried up tears. Now, I'm not advocating for adults to go around throwing tantrums like a child, but I do think that there's something to be learned from the way that children process emotions. If, when an emotion arises, we can name and acknowledge it and allow it to be present, it will naturally move through us and release. Another crucial piece of the equation for both children and for us is the presence of a loving, caring adult. The child throwing a tantrum often has a loving, though frustrated, adult standing nearby, witnessing the meltdown, and it's part of what provides the safety that he needs to let his emotions out. For us, we can be that loving adult to ourselves, comforting ourselves even as another part is experiencing anger, fear, sadness, or shame. To illustrate this, I'm going to share something pretty vulnerable, a personal experience that happened a few years ago. I chose to share this example for two reasons. Number one, because it truly, truly did suck. And number two, because it's one of the first examples I can remember where that observer part of me kind of watched myself going through something really hard and using the tools to manage in a way that made it more bearable. I was actually pretty surprised at how well I handled it. So here's the situation. I'd been divorced for about 7 years. Not my choice, but I was coming to peace with it. The grief process had taken much longer than I wanted it to, and one of the stories that I clung to that helped make that easier was the fact that I knew I wanted children and he did not. It wasn't the only reason for our divorce, but it was a big one. At that point, I was rarely in touch with my ex. He had remarried the previous year, and we were only ever in contact when there was some news about a mutual friend or family member. There weren't any hard feelings between us, just not a lot of reason to stay in touch. So I was a bit surprised when he reached out and asked to have coffee. A bar that had had a special meaning in our relationship was closing. Each of us had plaques on the wall there. I won't get into why, but it involved drinking a lot of craft beers in our 20s. He was going to pick up his plaque and wanted to know if he could get mine too, and then meet me for coffee to give it to me. I didn't really care if I had the plaque or not, but he insisted. I had a feeling something else was up, so I agreed to meet him under the pretense of him passing this old relic to me. On the morning we were supposed to meet, I had a baby shower for a friend from college. She was a mutual friend who'd been in our wedding, so I ended up telling her that I was going to see him that day, and wasn't it weird because I hadn't heard from him in so long? Her response was, "Yeah, so crazy he's having a baby. He's the last person I would imagine doing that." This friend was connected to him on Facebook, and I was not. She'd seen his announcement and assumed that I had too, but I hadn't. I remember exactly where I stood and how I felt as she casually delivered that news. She realized quickly that I hadn't known and apologized profusely. I assured her it was okay, and I was thankful that she'd told me so that I could process this now and not when I saw him later that day. And then I excused myself to the tiny half bath. I remember closing the door and staring at myself in the mirror over the pedestal sink. My heart was racing, my palms were sweaty, my head felt like it was swirling. It felt like I was standing on the edge of a really high cliff. I was kind of waiting to see how I was going to respond to this whole thing. For years, I'd thought that him having kids was something I absolutely could not bear. The story of why our divorce made sense relied on him staying kid-free, while I was going to go on and have children. And now, here I was at 36, and he was going to be a dad, and I was still very, very single. Now what? How did I cope? Oh, and I was at a baby shower, and I was going to have to see him in a few hours for the first time in nearly a year. Not great. Thankfully, I had been studying the work of Kristen Neff, a research psychologist who studies self-compassion. I'd been learning about how to process difficult emotions, and so there, in that tiny bathroom, I decided to give it a try. I put my hands on my heart and took a few deep breaths. I named out loud the feelings I was feeling. Shame, heartbreak, devastation, fear. I felt what they felt like. The shakiness, the lump in my throat, the clammy palms. I stood there with my hands on my heart, staring at my reflection, and I just let myself feel all of those feelings. I spoke words of comfort to myself. "Oh, honey, this is so hard. This is the thing you were afraid of, and now it's happening. It's okay. You're okay. Just breathe." I stayed in that bathroom for as long as I needed to, letting wave after wave of emotion pass through me. When I felt ready, I went back out to the baby shower. For a moment, I considered staying and trying to smile through my pain or stuff it down. But I knew that's not what I needed. I quietly said goodbye to the host and the guest of honor. I got in my car, drove 2 blocks, then pulled into a parking lot and just sobbed. I let all of my feelings just be there, and I comforted myself through them. And then I was totally fine. Kidding. I was still a wreck. I stayed in that parking lot for a while. I called my dad and a friend, 2 people I knew would listen and understand and would probably say all the things about how my ex was a total asshole, which isn't true, but was nice to hear anyway. And then we hung up and I felt better, but I knew I needed to continue to allow myself to feel my feelings as they came. I went to a coffee shop and pulled out my journal and did a long stream of consciousness writing about everything that was coming up. This is a strategy that many experts recommend. One of my coaches calls it a thought download. Another calls it release writing. The point is just to basically purge all of your thoughts, bad, good, totally unreasonable, get it all on the page. This is not something you go back and reread. You can even shred it or burn it when you're done. The point is to get it all out, like a cleanse. I felt so much better after the release writing. At that point, I had about an hour until it was time to meet my ex. I asked myself, "Sweetheart, what do you need?" It's great if you can talk to yourself with terms of endearment when you need some self-compassion. It sounds super cheesy, but it actually does feel good. So when I asked myself what I needed, I realized that I hadn't actually eaten all day. I drove to my favorite local smoothie shop and ordered a huge smoothie full of healthy goodness and made myself drink as much as I possibly could so that I wouldn't go into the meeting hungry. Then I touched up my makeup and went to meet my ex. And you know what? It wasn't that bad. I was actually happy for him, and really, really happy for me that I was not still with him. We'd gone our separate ways, and that was okay. I was sad that I wasn't partnered, but I absolutely did not want to be partnered with him. Someone on Instagram recently commented on one of my posts that she didn't regret her choices, but she did regret her options. This is one of the best explanations I've heard of this situation. In that moment, I regretted that I wasn't in a different place in life, but I could see that I'd absolutely made the best choices I could within my circumstances. I felt a ton of freedom, and I knew walking away that I'd reached some kind of closure that I hadn't even known that I'd needed. That was over 3 years ago, and I haven't spoken to or seen my ex since. Anytime I think of him and his baby, it really does just feel neutral. I haven't needed to think too much about it. It was done after that day. When I think about the hard things that lie ahead for me in the near future, embryo transfers that may or may not work, feelings of loneliness and grief that might come up during my pregnancy that doesn't look at all the way I always imagined it would be, the challenges of single motherhood, I have so much faith that I'm going to be fine through all of it. That I'm going to be at peace and thrive in my circumstances, even when they aren't what I would choose. I have so much freedom in my life because my happiness no longer depends on outside circumstances. I don't have to be afraid of what will or won't happen, how I will or won't feel, because I know that I can support myself through anything that could possibly arise. This freedom is available to you too. In the coming weeks, I'm going to share with you some ways that you can work with me as your coach. Coaching came into my life at the exact right time, and I've had the privilege to learn from several incredible teachers. I've taken the last few months to really invest in understanding the process of coaching because I feel such a calling to work in the intersection between the places where I suffered the most and the thing that brought me so much healing. For me, these issues of singleness and desire for a partner and a family, for so many years, I tried to deny how much I wanted it, or pep talk my way into believing I'd have it, or numb my desire so it didn't hurt so badly, or just lie awake in terror, worrying about how I would possibly bear the pain if it really never happened for me. Ugh, those times were so miserable before I had the tools I have now. Now, I think about what I've been through with so much self-compassion, and what's ahead of me with so much joy, because I know that I'm going to be just fine no matter what the future brings. I want this feeling for you too, friends. If you're interested in knowing more about the Single Greatest Choice coaching, I put a link in the show notes where you can find out more. I will also include information about Dr. Kristen Neff's self-compassion work and a few other resources that have been valuable to me in learning how to process my emotions. All right, friends, I hope this episode has made you think and given you some strategies for processing your own emotions. I look forward to seeing you again on Wednesday. This week's episode is one you're not going to want to miss. I'll be talking to Sarah, who considered single motherhood by choice, but then decided to become a platonic co-parent instead. Stay tuned and happy Mother's Day to all. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.